Episode 207 von Wing Today, Hockey O'Clock. Troy Wood, Associate Head Coach, Minnesota State, NCAA Hockey.
We've advanced almost to an NHL team. We have 28 players that are on our roster in this building today, and we have 22 commitments already that aren't playing here that are committed to come here in the next 4 years. So our roster size is almost in the mid-40s. That's how many players we're developing currently. So, you know, if today it's 2025 and I'm looking at players right now, or my scholarship board is full through 2028 and 2028-29. So I'm looking at kids that are actually 0-10s right now in their birth year looking at them in terms of development. So what's interesting for the general listener is that even for a European player, if he says, hey, I want to come over and play college hockey, the high-end programs are like 3 to 4 years advanced in the recruiting.
Win today, hockey, O'Clock.
In this Augenblick wird es richtig hitzig.
Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
Oh, he scored! Oh, what a goal! It doesn't get any better than this.
This truly is an annual highlight here on Win Today Hockey O'Clock. It's finally time again to talk NCAA hockey. We're hitting the home stretch of the season. We're not that far away from the tournament and then the Frozen Four. It's a great brand of hockey. And I guess there's no one better suited to talk about NCAA hockey than a good old friend of the program. It is, of course, Troy Ward. He's now an associate head coach for Minnesota State Mankato. Coach, it's been way too long, which makes me even happier that you're here on the show again.
Well, I agree. Thank you, Martin. It's great to see you again and great to be back with you and all the people back home. I would call part of my old home in the Linz area and certainly in Europe.
There might be a couple of people out there who have no clue who I'm talking to. So a quick little intro. You've been one are the coaches at the forefront of the analytics movement. You helped Pittsburgh in that regard back in the 90s. You had a great career that eventually brought you over in the mid-2010s to Linz. Up to yesterday, and we're recording this on a Monday, you were the last head coach to coach Linz into the semifinals. And you made a great career again once you moved back to North America. You landed with one of the premier NCAA programs. And shockingly enough, when I put out the interview request for you, I found out that, or I saw that the last time we touched base was in June of 2022 here on this podcast. We dedicated that conversation mainly to analytics and everything that's been going on in the big wide world of the National Hockey League. This time is a little more niche, but worthwhile exploring NCAA hockey. So if someone hasn't really followed what you've been up to the past 2.5 years, what's been going on in your life?
Well, Martin, you know, at the collegiate level over here in the U.S., you know, the game has changed so much since the last time I was in it, which was Wisconsin, 2002 to 2006. So what's changed is it's really a 365-day-a-year job. I wouldn't say it's 24 hours a day, but it's a lot. And some significant changes in college hockey in the last, you know, year, especially with the CHL coming aboard now where you can recruit CHL players. So that just, you know, made the pool get way bigger in terms of players that can enter college hockey. So, you know, my life is mainly being a father, mainly being a husband, number one and number two. And number three is mainly just, you know, still coaching athletes both on and off the ice to make them the best version of themselves they can be and helping them in any way we can. And I got here to Minnesota State 2 years ago. This is just towards the end of our second year. So it's been a good change to get back. The one thing about collegiate hockey, which is different than pro, and I was 19, 20 years in pro, is here you're a real teacher. They really look up to you in terms of, you know, your feedback, both on and off the ice, how you can help them. They're lasting relationships for a lifetime. which is the biggest impact I think you have, they have on us and we have on them. So it's a unique position in teaching and coaching hockey.
I will get to that, the difference between pro hockey and NCAA hockey in a bit. I just want to get to your official job title, because over here, we know head coaches, we know assistant coaches, but hardly ever you hear about or have an associate head coach. What's the job description of an associate head coach? How do you interact with the head coach of the program and the assistant coaches of the program?
Well, the associate head coaching title is more of a, probably one of experience. So somebody like myself, who's rather seasoned in the game, you know, I guess it's a way to put me just below the head coach. And over here, because of a college, like Luke Strand, who's our head coach, might, you know, be leaving at any time to coach one of our U.S. teams over the break. That happened when I was at Wisconsin. I was also the associate head coach. And then while the head coach was gone, I took over the head coaching duties and responsibilities. So I work right underneath the head coach, but not much different than the two other assistants that are here. Mine is just sometimes by way of finances. I'm finance different based on experience. And my titles are a little bit deeper rooted into the team in terms of making final decisions as we move forward, both on and off the ice, with some things that we do.
Obviously, you're the seasoned veteran among the coaches, Luke Strand being 52 years of age, you being 62. So there goes the seniority component. You've already alluded to it a little bit. You being a real teacher of the game in college hockey, and teaching is probably the right key word, because there's always this fine line that you have to walk as someone who's working in the NCAA, because it's the student athletes. They're supposed to get an education. They're supposed to graduate, and all the while they're playing, well, almost professional sports, especially when you consider the surroundings and the money that's in it. How do you as a coach walk this fine line between educating them in terms of hockey, trying to make good people out of them, walk this fine line between academics and athletics?
Yeah, Martin, it's a really good point. There is a fine line there. So, you know, on most college hockey staffs right now, there's one of us as coaches, usually one of the assistants, is in charge of the academic part of our players, meets with the people on campus all the time. All these players that play NCAAs have tutors to their disposal all the time. They have somebody that's in charge of all their academic planning. So we have one assistant here that's truly responsible just for that part of their life. Then it get branched off into me, like I'm more of the teacher, like I break down the game film, meet with guys constantly in my office here, show video. So it kind of gets divided in two ways there, where the other guy who's in charge of the academics doesn't do the on-ice teaching as much as I do. He kind of handles the academics. He's obviously on the ice and doing hockey, but that's kind of becomes my forte, based on experience again. But there's the fine line is trying to give them balance in a sense of being, take a German word, Ruhig, be calm. Like, they've got to be calm during some difficult times, because managing academics, managing hockey, managing their social life, and just the fact that most of these athletes are anywhere from 19 to 24 years old, or 18 to 24, they're going through a time in their life where they're making critical decisions in their development, both on and off the ice, and how they handle things. So, you know, we all walk a fine line there and try and give them balance, give them some calmness during these difficult times in the water, so to speak. But as you know, if you have a good culture and you run a good program, things just kind of run themselves. And we've been fortunate to do that here.
Now, when we talk about the academics, are there certain criteria NCAA athletes need to meet, any kind of thresholds? Or, like, for example, if the grades for one player or another, for whatever reasons, are going to go south? Is there a point where he's not allowed to compete on the team anymore until he gets it right?
Yes. Yeah, every semester, we have two semesters a year, obviously up until Christmas, and then the end of the year at the first part of May. We're done in early May. If you're not passing the standard, which is the NCAA standard of 2.0 or above, you then forfeit, you know, potentially the next fall. If you fall behind, you have different, each university has a unique system where athletes, whether it's summer school or over Christmas, they can take credits that they might have stumbled on to make those up to make sure they continue to stay eligible. But every college institution in the U.S. has athletes that have to meet a standard in order to stay eligible to play in games.
Before we get to the nitty-gritty that makes college hockey and Minnesota State Mankato especially, how is it for you as a proper Minnesotan, someone who was born and raised there, someone who still lives in the land of the Thousand Lakes? How is it to be coaching one of the premier programs in the country, and especially in college hockey in Minnesota?
Well, first and foremost, it's an honor. You know, you think about growing up as a kid in Minnesota and playing, and, you know, most kids that grew up in the state of Minnesota, your number one goal would be to play in the Minnesota State High School Tournament, which just got over a little over a week ago. There's 19,000 people. They play where the Minnesota Wild play. But even in the sectional finals, like as a recruiter, I went to games that had 5,000 and 6,000 fans just for just a general sectional hockey game in high school. So that's number one, you know, as a kid growing up in the state. And then you kind of look at the universities that play hockey in the state of Minnesota. Obviously, there's a lot of them. And so with all those, you grow up as a kid having a choice of where to go. And different parts of the state. You can go up north to Bemidji or Minnesota Duluth. You can come down south to Minnesota State. You can go west to St. Cloud. You can stay right in the city and play at Minnesota. You know, so there's a lot of places to play Division I hockey, but it's truly an honor. Obviously, a dream come true. I used to play against Mankato as a player when I played college hockey. So I had some familiarity with the town and people that are here, some of my friends. So it's just been truly an honor, especially at this point in my career, to hopefully end at an institution that not only, I think, supports the athlete, but supports the student athlete and their future endeavors.
Let us dive right in as regards the state of NCAA hockey. Last time you coached at an NCAA institution, you had the great fortune of not only having to coach or having the honor to coach a certain Joe Pavelski. There was also an Austrian on the team with Bernd Brückler back in the day in the early 2000s at Wisconsin. So we're looking at 20 years now that you've been removed from the NCAA hockey as the day-to-day business goes until you got back with it at Minnesota State Mankato. What has changed? How has the game, how has NCAA hockey evolved?
Well, it's really evolved in terms of skill. I think the development level is second to none. When you look at anywhere a kid from 18 years old, which is rare in U.S. hockey, like it's more of a someone that's played juniors arrives in college as a freshman, 19 or a 20-year-old, or even a turning a 21-year-old. So it depends on your program and your philosophy. Some programs are really young. Some programs just bring in older guys. But what's changed over time is just the skill development. The skill development on the week-to-week basis, both from a video standpoint, an on-ice standpoint, an analytics standpoint, is really, really high. And it's very personalized. That's what's changed. By personalized, I mean we tape our practices. We manage their heart rates every day, both on and off the ice. We get them to max, you know, max work ethic every day, and we keep them at that. That's charted every day. They skate in the mornings now where they'd used to when I was at Wisconsin, not. Like, we will skate individually with one-on-one skill development in the morning. We practice in the afternoon at 1:30. So guys are on the ice sometimes twice a day. It's just really evolved in terms of development. So the NHL supports the programs just because of the development phase Obviously, people look to come here, whether you're from overseas where you are, whether you're in juniors or whether you're in high school. Everybody wants to go the development route, because I think an old saying of mine would be, you know, development is in a crock pot. It's not in a microwave. You've got to be slow and you got to take it patiently when you're trying to develop a good hockey player.
Who kind of, that might be a loaded question, but who kind of tilted the scale towards the NHL paying even more attention to everything that goes on in the NCAA? I've had the good fortune of talking to Coach David Carl a couple of years ago. And obviously, he coached one of the premier players that's now in the National Hockey League with Cale Makar. Brock Faber would be, or would come to mind when talking about to, or when talking about someone who made the jump and established himself as one of the premier defensemen. Is there a player, or are there players that went through the program that really caught the NHL's attention in that regard, that they thought, oh, wow, that's a proper pipeline of talent?
I don't know if it's one particular player or a group of players, Martin, as much as it is, I think across, at least in the U.S. and maybe obviously talk NCAA, you might be talking some Europeans or obviously some Canadians. But what has happened is the youth in the direction of the development of players at a younger age, especially here in the U.S., they're doing such a tremendous job with development at a young age. These kids are now different from when you talk about 20 years ago when I was at Wisconsin. These kids are hitting college. Like I had Ryan Suter, who's, I don't know, 35 or 38 years old at Wisconsin. He played 1 year for us and then turned pro, played in the American League for a year as a lockout and then went right to the NHL. These kids now, like they'll hit here their freshman year and they might be leaving by the time Christmas is here because they've just advanced that much. But when they arrived here, they were almost probably ready. They just still needed a little bit of seasoning and one step, and then everybody waited to see how they were going to make that jump. It's very common now. We're probably in the next 3 weeks where we're going to have significant players being signed by NHL teams that are undergraduate players, and they'll be pulled out of college early. They might be free agents and not drafted. They could be drafted, but we'll see them. Like we have a 6'6 defenseman that was drafted by Columbus last spring or last summer. There's a chance like they might try and sign him after his freshman year here, and they believe that he'll go play in their system and eventually play in the NHL. So it's really common now because of the development at early ages and our coaching that these kids get to college and they're almost ready to go.
Just to give a name to the person you just mentioned, it's defenseman Luke Ashton, and he sits at 6'6 and 238 pounds in European measurements. That would be 198 centimeters and 108 kilos. So he's a massive human being, massive frame, massive range, and obviously could be one of the prototype defensemen in the mold of a Victor Hedman. But as college hockey or versions of college hockey have been around for more than 120 years. I think one of the collegiate games happened in the late 1900s with between Harvard and Cornell already. So the roots of the game date back so much longer than one might think. College hockey, let's say it's been around for 1.5 centuries. And the tournaments were introduced, I think, in the 70s, and they've been ongoing ever since. But this new ruling, I think, that came out last year, that players from the CHL, so from the Canadian Hockey Leagues, that the junior leagues that are the Western Hockey League, the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League, as I learned the other day, and obviously the Ontario Hockey League, that they are now eligible to join NCAA institutions. How earth-shattering, how groundbreaking has this ruling been for the sports of NCAA hockey?
Well, it's been earth-shattering. I really, if I go back in my time, I don't think there would have been a time, Martin, ever in my life I would have felt while I was alive and coaching that the CHL players would be eligible to come to college. It's been a huge movement, and it's certainly change the landscape. We've had two major landscape changes here in the last 2 years. One was the NLI, where players now can get paid to play in the collegiate level by getting out and working an advertisement or working with a company that wants to hire them. And so players now at our level and all across the board are getting paid. That was a monumental thing just over a year ago in the last year. And then all of a sudden the CHL thing hit at Christmas time this year. So these are huge changes. It certainly changes the pool of players that now will land in college. I think the future is, it's a little bit unknown. Like, we're not sure what the impact is of this yet. We're going to find out more in the next basically 18 months.
NIL, one of the buzzwords in college right now. It stands for name, image, and likeness. And it's basically a way for student athletes that previously weren't allowed to even sign an autograph that made them $5. Now signing huge endorsement deals. And I'm loosely following college football as well. That's obviously a little bigger than NCAA hockey. And with college football, it has led to players going for the best deal, looking for opportunities to constantly make more out of their situation, transferring from one college to another. As far as transfers go and moving on to bigger institutions, better deals whatsoever, how has NIL already changed NCAA hockey as drastically as NCAA football has changed, or is that not going to happen?
Not quite as much as football, Martin, or basketball has changed the landscape. Really, there you would say the rich get richer in NCAA football and basketball. But the same is true in hockey right now. You know, the Big Ten, which is the Minnesotas, the Michigan States, the Michigans, Ohio States, those programs are getting richer for sure. And they have a lot of NLI money. But institutions like ours, which is in a different conference, lower than the Big Ten, so to speak, we have good money too. So it's about people in your community getting out and getting this thing rolling and going down the tracks. Each institution handles it however they want. But what is coming into play, the other part about college hockey that's different for the Europeans to figure out and listen to about us talking about it, is the portal. So in today's game, kids can leave whatever program they want whenever they want. So they can come here as a freshman at Minnesota State, play the entire year, do really well, love it here, but they feel like, I want to go play at in the Big Ten. I want to portal out and go to, let's say, Michigan or Ohio State, because they feel with their agent that conference is a better conference and they've risen to the level where they think they've accomplished what they want. So they might go in the portal here, but their agent will get them to go to a different league. They will find NLI money for them. They will make sure their scholarship's the same, and they'll make sure that they're getting paid more money than they would have been had they had stayed here. So the NLI is a piece of it, and the portal now has obviously changed the landscape of college hockey forever.
So is it safe to assume that a majority of the NCAA players already have an agent, which would have been mind-boggling maybe 20 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, every player on our team has an agent prior to them getting here. You know, I deal with junior coaches for sure. But mainly I'll go to games. I don't necessarily have to go see a junior coach before or after a game. I can go to a game and I already know that if I like that player, if I'm ahead of the game, I already know who his agent is. And usually me and the agent have talked prior to me going to the game anyway about his interest in Minnesota State. So my life is driven by agents, and that's my number one communication line to a player.
Let's just stick with the CHL opening up a talent pipeline towards the NCAA for a minute. How will this affect and change NCAA hockey?
Well, it's going to change it a lot because every program, you have to realize, the bigger the program, let's say if you look at the conferences, the Big Ten or the NCHC, which is the Denvers, the North Dakotas, those programs, Arizona State, those programs at those two levels are going to probably go to the CHL and recruit and go after an 18 or a 19-year-old player. And so that's causing problems right now in the major junior ranks, that the U.S. coaches now can come up and go over the border, go to a game, which we could never really go to in the past, go watch a WHL game, whether it's in Seattle or Canada, whatever part of the league you're in, and then go down and try and meet with a player or meet the agent there and say, at the age of 18, he's in his first year or second year in the WHL, and we want him to come to this university. So that has definitely changed the landscape. But then the lower level Division I programs, they're infecting the teams in a much different way. So the resentment isn't as high. Like, let's say, for an example, I go north of the border for Minnesota State. I go to a WHL game, but I'm looking at a 20-year-old who then would be a freshman here. So he's played 3 or 4 years already in the Western Hockey League and then going to be a freshman here to extend his development. Then I'm not looked at quite as bad to those WHL coaches and GMs because I've actually helping one of their players that's at the end of their time with that program. I'm going to take it a step further. So we're looked at maybe, or depending on what player you're recruiting and the age of that player, we're looked at in a different light. The more we go younger as a group of universities, the more the friction's going to be there. So that's why I say 18 months from now, let's figure out where this is at. There is some high tensions both on both sides of the border right now in terms of recruiting. But likewise, on the other side of it, for me to go out in the state of Minnesota and be a recruiter and watch a high school game, the games I went to this year to watch Minnesota high school players that I would eventually recruit to come here in a couple of years, when I go to these games now, I never saw a WHL recruiter or a GM or scout. Now they're down here all the time because now a Minnesota high school player could leave as a sophomore or junior saying, I'm playing on not a very good team. I have a chance to go north of the border and I can play in the WHL for a year or two and develop better and then come back and go to college. So it's been reciprocal on both sides, both GMs and coaches on both college and WHL or OHL or Quebec major are going on both sides of the border now.
Got two more questions on this. And the first is indeed about the state of Minnesota and the program that the Minnesota State Mankato wants to run. How important is it to have a Minnesotan core? If I counted it correctly, there are 10 people who grew up in the state of Minnesota that are currently playing on Minnesota State. How important is that to you and the program?
Well, great question, Martin. It's a really important part of our program, but it's not the end all. Minnesota, typically, University of Minnesota has always been the number one program in terms of size in the Big Ten and in players that have grown up to say, I want to be a Gopher. Still is that way today. I think a lot of players just would like to go play for the Minnesota Gophers because it's in the Big Ten. So they have more of a directive to get Minnesotans, and it took them forever to get outside of the state of Minnesota to recruit. Ours is important that we have a footprint in this state and kind of have a handle on things, but it's not the end all. And the other part that's really interesting, Martin, for you and listeners is if I give a Minnesota kid a scholarship at, let's say 85%, which is going to pay for all of his schooling, it's going to pay for his housing and his food. If I give that same percentage to a Canadian player who's playing junior up there, that might only cost me 68%. So because of where people are from and their academic achievements, every player's percentage is different. So how you put the pie together to get all your players that you really want and how you slice that is really becomes important in how you build your program. So we need a footprint within the state, but we need the right footprint within the state at the right value for our money as to fulfill our full roster.
The interesting thing and the question that came to mind when you talked about trying to or potentially recruit Canadians maybe at an early age or let them finish their development after they've gone through the respective leagues and finished their eligibility there. Have you, as a coach yourself or on the staff, tried to define a philosophical sweet spot of what kind of players and what kind of ages you want to go after? Or are you gonna make up your minds as you go through the process if you want to recruit 18-year-olds or let them finish their eligibility in a CHL?
you're on top of your game? That's another great question. And it is philosophical. Every staff has a different one. So Minnesota State, prior to us getting here 2 years ago, was very, very successful, extremely successful. The coach that left here went to the University of Wisconsin. His name was Mike Hastings. Under Mike, this team was known as a very old team. In fact, this team 3 years ago was older than 75% of the American Hockey League. So there were a lot of 24, 25-year-old players that were playing here at Minnesota State because they took kids that were turning 21 as freshmen. They were 25-year-old seniors. So they went very old. We've flipped it. We want to bring in 19-year-old freshmen. We want to develop players to play in the National Hockey League. So we're looking to get players that are younger and get them in the prime and continue their development at a high rate of speed, in hopes that they would do well for us while they're here, but have a chance to leave early and sign a pro deal. So two different philosophies, two different head coaches. And right now we're kind of down the path where we're grabbing a lot of players that are younger. But we've also, you know, one layer of this more is we've advanced almost to an NHL team. We have 28 players that are on our roster in this building today. And we have 22 commitments already that aren't playing here that are committed to come here in the next 4 years. So our roster size is almost in the mid 40s. That's how many players we're developing currently. So, you know, today it's 2025 and I'm looking at players right now, or my scholarship board is full through 2028 and 2829. So I'm looking at kids that are actually 010s right now in their birth year looking at them in terms of development. So it's what's interesting for the general listener is that even for a European player, if he says, hey, I want to come over and play college hockey, the high-end programs are like 3 to 4 years advanced in the recruiting. So if a kid says, oh, I want to come next year and I think I've played pretty high level and I want to come over and play, like our roster's probably already full 3 years in advance.
But that just shows how forward-thinking the NCAA is, and that happens when you have that huge turnover every year because you don't know how many players are eventually graduating, going on to other endeavors and opportunities. And we just, and that might give people an image of a player. We just had Lucas Sauter play for the Pioneers here in Winter Day Ice Hockey League, and he graduated from Minnesota State, actually played last year for you and the team, and then correct, moved directly to pro hockey. And that's so interesting that there are so many different avenues one can go down after graduating and finishing the college career.
Yes. Yeah. We'll have others this year. You know, we've got some good seniors that are right now are looking at the ice league through their agents and being, you know, talked about signing deals over there. So these guys are moving on quick.
I want to get to that part in a bit, but first I want to start at the kind of grassroots level, and that is recruiting. And you're talking about already looking at players that were born in the 2010s and trying to look very far down the road. When you go on a recruiting trip, or maybe for the university and the hockey program itself, how does recruiting work? Who does it, and who's putting out the sales pitches?
Well, we have four coaches here, fifth with a goalie coach. We have five coaches on staff. The main four of us are all recruiting, basically, I wouldn't say 24 hours a day, but quite a bit. The head coach is the least active in the recruiting world, but he's also the guy that closes the door on all the recruits with their parents, meaning he's the final sales pitch. So he's involved, but not as much by way of travel. His responsibilities with NLI, the portal, CHL, all the university stuff, he's pretty much in town and campus. Luke Strand is all the time. But he has to get out and he has to do certain trips. The other three of us are pretty much out all the time. We alternate. There's usually two coaches at a minimum that would be at a weekend series when we play on a Friday, Saturday. And we could have two guys on the road, one in Canada, one in the US, or wherever we would be. So we're all out. We all are evaluating. We all have the same directive as to what type of player we're looking for. So we go out with the intent prior to leaving here, we're already zeroed in on a player. Like, we're not leaving Mankato, Minnesota just to go to watch a game, not knowing who's involved in the game. We already know the player we're probably going to look at that fits our profile and is in our footprint of what we want. So we've already established that now today with video, all the avenues we have, the relationships we have, the agents, which agents represent what type of players. So we're pretty much going pinpointing to one player that we're going to go watch, or maybe two or three in one game. And that's all we're going there to see. If somebody else catches their eyes, it's a good thing for us, but it's pretty specific in terms of where we're going, who we're going to see. So, and for us, the number one criteria that we look for, Martin, is hockey sense or hockey IQ. But that's the number one thing we want to go and make sure that we've evaluated it right.
In terms of regional aspects, and we're talking at a time where one of the best players on the planet came out of Arizona. You're captain, current captain of the Minnesota State Mankato hockey program. Was born and raised in San Diego. He got up north a little earlier until finally finding a home, a temporary home on Minnesota State. But how much in terms of territory did you have to, or did you want to widen the net these past couple of years? What avenues where you never thought they might be possible, there might be talent, are you trying to explore that you wouldn't have like 15, 20 years ago?
It's really become, even in the U.S., it's become all, few states, 52 states. Like, it wasn't that long ago. We used to always say it was the three M's in recruiting. It was Michigan, Minnesota, and Massachusetts. That's where you did all your evaluations. Those were the three states where you went and watched players. Now we're at the mercy of every state. Every state has players now. And for maybe they were born in a certain place in the U.S. like San Diego, but they ended up playing in the juniors in USHL and Lincoln or wherever. But these players nowadays, their actual birth year and where they were born is significantly wide based compared to what it used to be. And then because of the money that's involved in the different pockets of the society in the U.S., you can start to see where the growth is, and because of the financials that are involved. So, like, for example, L.A. Kids out of L.A. now never used to be there 20 years ago. I had a Robbie Earle that played for me at Wisconsin, who was from L.A. originally. He was the only kid. And then now it's very common for us, if we wanted to go watch young talent, just to fly to Los Angeles and go watch games for a weekend. So it's become across the U.S. in terms of recruiting.
That's what two cups in the early 2010s do for you, and Vegas, the same with all the warm weather teams that have won cups recently, the Panthers, the Lightning. So there are a lot of trips down south awaiting for you and the coaches. But once a trip is successful and you narrow it down to that one player that you really want to have on the team, how does that final sales pitch look like? How do you try to, in the truest sense of the word, recruit the player?
You get down to the root of, we want them here. We try and decide on how many visits that player can take. He can take five visits. So a player out there could take five visits, and we say, are you taking all five? And he'd say, no, I'm taking three. Then for us, it becomes a little strategical. Do we want to be first or do we want to be last? There's some thought process into that with all recruits. And then what we do is, we've been recruiting the parents all along, but then we offer the visit for them to come in. That means we would fly in the player for wherever he's playing, might be different than his home. And then we'd fly in the parents as well. And they would all come in on a visit. We have 48 hours to basically show them our campus, show them our facilities, show them what we would do for their son, both on and off the ice. Then fly them back home. Depends on philosophy again of the program. Some programs will put a deadline on a player. They would say to a player, okay, we're going to give you 48 hours or 7 days to make your decision, and then we'd like to know where we stand. And then some programs don't put a deadline on it. They just recruit them because they're so young that you don't really put a date on it for them, but you stay in touch with them nonstop to make sure that you're on the forefront of their mind. So the recruiting process for each athlete can be relatively short and fast sometimes, or they can be long drawn out over a year's time and you just keep recruiting them to stay with them. But the education piece for the parent and the player is most important. So you'd like to get them here to spend time to really see what the fabric is of our program and then what the community's like and then what we can do for them both on and off the ice.
Now, one might think, and that's from the outset looking in, and no better person to answer that, that recruiting north of the border in Canada might have gotten a little more difficult over the past couple of months with the relationship on a political level deteriorating between the US and Canada, and these political attacks, as I'd call them, are rather one-sided. Has that change in relationship between two longtime and extremely close allies already hit the sports scene too? And if not, is it eventually going to hit it?
Well, good. Another good question. We haven't felt anything yet. We just had one of our coaches, assistant coaches, was up there this weekend, was in Canada last week, and traveled to and from, was up there. That political scene hasn't reached down into the sports scene at this yet, this time. I think when you're dealing with the border and driving across the border and doing some things through immigration, I think tensions, I would say, can be a little bit higher depending on where you're at and depend based on your feelings and your viewpoint from it. But this is a naive comment, Martin, but I'll give you my best of living here every day. I would say that to the outside world, that in my view, at 62 years old, it doesn't seem very good. But internally, the U.S. has changed since his election. Things and people have changed in the U.S. And I would say that less people through his first run over 4 years ago were inclined not to be a believer in what he's doing. And I would say now he's got the majority of the country. So it's become different over time. I wouldn't say that I'm selling him, meaning Mr. Trump, as the right guy or the wrong guy. I can just tell you from in a state where they're not proactive Trump people, I would say that there's a lot of people based on some decisions he's making and routes he's going about running the country, they've changed their opinion over time versus what we had before. But it hasn't affected the sports world yet in terms of border crossing and in terms of recruiting, but, time will tell.
It's going to be, unfortunately, a fascinating watch, especially with the National Hockey League having Canadian teams that cross the border all the time. So we're eventually going to find out how it will affect things, which makes me get to finally the big point or the big thing that awaits less than a month from now. I think it's April 10th to April 12th. It's the Frozen Four this year. It will be, or St. Louis, Missouri will be the host city to the Frozen Four, which is the grand finale of the NCAA tournament. And you're also here, and you've been doing a tremendous job already to educate listeners a little bit about how the workings, the inner workings of these seeding processes and selections and tournaments work. There are different conferences. You've already talked about a couple of them. Minnesota State, Mankato, is in a Central Collegiate Hockey Association. There's the Big Ten with the Michigans and the Ohio States of this world. There are many other conferences with big-time programs. How do people decide who's allowed to play in the NCAA tournament?
Well, you have automatic bids. Automatic bids are like we just won our CCHA by way of St. Thomas is in our conference, but they're going to the NCHC a year from now. They left our league and went on. So this year they're excluded from the NCAAs because of that change. So by our way of winning on last Saturday against Bemidji, we qualify, even though we play St. Thomas this next Friday here coming up. We've already qualified because they're not qualifying. So every league has a qualifying situation. then so we get the automatic bid now from the CCHA. At the same time, we are also in contention had we had not won because of our pairwise. Pairwise is a analytical formula that puts your toughness of your conference into consideration, plus your wins and losses and who you play. So because we beat Michigan, we beat North Dakota, we beat Omaha this year, which are teams that are quote unquote, maybe at a higher level than ours. They just play a different brand, but they're considered a higher level. They're not totally in that way, but they play a different brand. We beat all those teams. So our pairwise has put us right in the top 16. And right now we're on the cusp of saying that 16, but so we would have had a chance to go to the NCAAs based on our pairwise, which is all the formulas put into one thing. It spits out who the best teams are. But otherwise, there's some automatic bids, and then every league will then get sorted out this coming Sunday for a show, just like they do with the NCAA basketball. There'll be a show as to who plays where and what four sites to start the NCAAs.
That is called Selection Sunday, and the metric you mentioned, it sounds like an incredibly advanced tiebreaker, and as it's guaranteed that you'll be going to the tournament. What's the bus around campus, the buzz around the locker room with the tournament fast approaching, knowing that this is the most important time of the year, knowing that this is a one game opportunity to advance to another round? I mean, most Europeans probably know the NCAA tournament in basketball. That usually gets shown over here too. NCAA hockey and the tournament is very slowly catching on, and I'd like to change that here with We Today Hockey O'Clock too, but be not too far away from the start of the tournament. What's the mood on campus with the team and within the coaches?
Well, it's really high. I mean, we sell out we have 5,000 seat arena. It's similar to Linz in terms of, it maybe it's a little bigger in terms of height, but it's similar. It's got one end where there's no seating, similar to my time in Linz. But it's a big arena. It's nice. We live in an unbelievable facility in terms of being modern and up to date. But the one thing about the University of Minnesota State at Mankato here is we're the only Division I program along with women's hockey. So everybody's budget here athletically is based on how well we do. So the more we win, the more money we bring to this institution every year. That helps pay for a lot of other teams and sports on our campus. So the buzz is big. The buzz is really high. We live in, our arena is downtown from where the campus is, which is about 2 miles up the hill. But all the businesses downtown, we had 5,000 people here on Saturday night. They all thrive based on how well we do. If we don't do well, then it's not going to bring people down here to, have pregame dinners and sit back and enjoy some light cocktails, if you would, and just sit back with their friends and enjoy the weather right now in this part of the country. So a lot of people are super excited about what we've been able to accomplish to this point, and a lot of people count on us every year to have success here because it helps the enrollment of the school, it helps the overall vibe, and it certainly helps this community as a whole have some of identity and brings some finances to our city.
You've had regular appearances with Minnesota State at Mankato in the NCAA tournament. If we also include this year's appearance, the past 12 years brought 9 appearances in the tournament, but also 2 appearances in the Final Four with 2021 and 2022. Granted, you're in a tournament, and granted that this is a good thing, but how does the complexion in terms of enrollment, finances, endorsements, donors giving more money to the school, how does that change with a Final Four or a Frozen Four appearance?
Oh, gets really big then. You go from, let's just say, coins to dollar bills. It goes really big. The finances are long-lasting. They impact a lot of people. More so. The deeper we go, the more impact it has community-wide and certainly with other students and athletes on our campus. So it is a big part of it. Getting to the Frozen Four would be a great accomplishment for our program. and bring a lot to this university, just because, you know, over here in the U.S. right now, it's the shape of education is changing. It's changing, and less students are going to be involved in certain schools or universities that aren't as enrolled anymore with people online and things like that. So for us to provide, you know, our institution has around 15,000 students that are undergraduate and 3,000 that are postgraduate. So that's 18,000 students here every year. And we're one of the best attended universities in the state of Minnesota. And to keep that, we impact that by our success and how we handle ourselves.
Now, if one is looking at the USA Today's men's college hockey poll, as it stands right now, and again, we're a week before Selection Sunday, we're a couple weeks removed from, or before the NCAA tournament hits the Frozen Four. The college hockey poll has Boston College, Michigan State, Western Michigan, and Minnesota as their top four. Are these indeed the big dogs, or are there other teams European listeners should be looking out for in terms he wants to get his rooting or rep his rooting interests around an NCAA team?
Well, I think for the fan out there, I think there's a lot of teams. I would say this year, everybody's beat everybody. I mean, not anybody has been that dominant. I think Boston College, you know, has been and can be right at the top all the time. They're 26-6 overall. We're 26-8, so we're similar. I think whether you call it Boston College, Michigan State, Western Michigan, Minnesota, Denver, Providence, Ohio State, Penn State, even our program, I think anybody can beat anybody, because you get down to, you play on either a Thursday and a Saturday or a Friday and a Sunday. You win two games at your regional and you're in the Frozen Four, and they're just single games with a day in between. So, you know, whether you're in sports and playing, let's say, you know, overseas for a hockey team, or you're playing here, it's always about peaking at the right time and being your best. And that's part of coaching, and that's part of players, and that's part of the fabric of your program. You want to be your best at the right time. And right now, we're going to see these teams that finish well and move that on into the NCAAs. So I say that anybody can beat anybody. If you're a fan of the game, you could pick your team, and they might do well if they're going to get to the NCAAs, because it's everybody playing one game.
Just had a look at the Boston College roster. And just for the sake of comparison, you have one NHL draftee. They have 12 on their roster. But the beauty, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the beauty of this tournament is that it's a single game elimination tournament. The whole hockey world is playing series, best of seven, best of five, best of three series, but it is single game elimination. To me, that's always been the beauty of it. How is that for you and the coaches, that, you know, it just comes down to this one game? You don't get a second, third, or fourth chance in a best of seven format.
Well, it makes you feel good. I mean, like you said, if you're going to go play Boston College and they've got 12 NHL draft picks, you're like, okay, we got to be at our best for 60 minutes. And we need all our players to play at the level we believe they can. And if we play a tighter and a more consistent game and we're opportunistic on the chances we get, we have a chance to beat the number one seed. So everybody in college coaching is really excited about this time. We're in it right now. We had to win this last Saturday at home against Bemidji. One game. We had the weekend before in the quarterfinals where it's best of three. So we beat Lake Superior State two straight. And then this weekend, semifinals and finals are just one game. So we beat Bemidji in a one game this last Saturday. Now we play St. Thomas this Friday for the championship of our league in the playoffs. And regardless, we'll play into the NCAAs. So it's just one game. You got to get your team ready to rock and roll. And that, a lot of that has to do with them, and a lot of it has to do with coaching and how you prepare.
Now, I'd advise listeners of this program to check out Minnesota State at Mankato, check out their trajectory as they move, hopefully, towards another Frozen Four appearance. I got one question to round this out, and I've already mentioned Lucas Sauter making the trip overseas, going straight from college to playing pro hockey in Europe. And you already telling listeners that there are a lot of players in the collegiate rankings looking at that specific avenue. You also mentioned that the skill level has gone up tremendously these past couple of years and decades, and everybody in all of hockey and pro hockey is looking for skill. You've got a keen eye. You've been coaching hockey for decades now, and now working with the NCAA, at what point do you think or do you know that someone's got it to move on from college and have a pro career wherever?
Well, I think the player makes the person. Or excuse me, the person makes the player. It's become a fabric. I think you kind of understand that the player has the, whether it's the physical gifts, the hockey IQ, the skill, the ability to skate, like those are all parts of it. But now what I would say over my time and decades in the game, the person makes the player. And so you got to understand who that player has matured to, where he wants to go play. Like Lucas Sauter, I got him as agent. I got him overseas. I believed he could play in that league, having coached there. But I also believed he was the right person to go fit in and be open-minded to lifestyle changes and changes and how he would adapt and what type of teammate he would be. I really believe he has a good heart and he's really a good person and respects people of different development. And so I felt that was a good fit for him. It's turned out from what our conversation been great for him, enjoyed it, and he fit in. So I think today, Martin, it's still one of the most gratifying things. If we're on the show together and we're listening, our ultimate goal is to raise good people as parents and raise people that are open-minded because of the culture and the society we live in. And they've got to be adaptable and they've got to be open-minded to grow in the place they live in and change. And so that has been the number one thing for me over time, where players are starting to move around the world and play at a high pace early versus how long it used to take. But I think our growth has been just in the development of people. And that's what makes the game of hockey so special for me.
Great words to close out the great conversation. I don't say this lightly, but you're one of the very few persons where I always leave a conversation way smarter than I go into the conversation. So thankful that you took an hour out of your time, out of your busy schedule. Very, very grateful to having had you again on the show, and hopefully this is not going to be the last time. Looking forward to talking to you down the road. All the best for the NCAA tournament, and thanks for doing this.
You are more than welcome, Martin. It's just a pleasure. Danke. It's been wonderful.
Win today. Hockey. Oh God.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move. Another nice move.